Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
High and inside, arching music, a little chin music, take that hit for a ride.
It's time for some chin music.
Hey, Jan, how about a warning?
Sure. Watch out you don't get killed.
Because sometimes in baseball, you've got to send a strong message, especially when someone has it coming. Each Saturday, David and Bruce come in high and tight with a response to something that deserves one, like this.
I would certainly say that he has made an impact on us and our decision-making on what that position looks like moving forward. Obviously, coming to spring training, we thought that he had a chance to make the club. Obviously, it didn't work out, and he went to work and put himself in a spot where he's performing at a really high level offensively and defensively, has certainly put himself in a conversation to be the starting shortstop moving forward.
Conversation starts with you.
It's a collaborative, collective effort. It really starts with Colson just going out there and doing his thing and continuing to play well. And, I think that every club in the league would like to have a 6'4 shortstop who hits a bunch of homers. So, yeah, we're in a good spot with him.
Welcome back inside the clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670. The Score, David Hall, Bruce Levine here. Second hour until 11 o'clock. Talking baseball on a gloomy Saturday morning in Chicago. Looks like it's clearing up. But Bruce, you and the Venable going back and forth about Colson Montgomery, and I love how you brought it back to him. The conversation starts with you. Yes, the White Sox manager will have a say in how frequently Colson Montgomery plays shortstop for the White Sox. What did you take away from that exchange?
Well, it's been an ongoing discussion between you and I all year since Montgomery came back and started playing short, and then they put him at third, right?
Right.
And we kept scratching our heads, said this is the shortstop of the future, number one pick, came from nowhere and is now the starting shortstop, and you're putting him at third base? It's like, you know, you make us do our job by inquiring why don't you think he's a shortstop if you're putting him at third? So that creates the doubt, and everything you've seen about Colson Montgomery points to you that he's a shortstop, right? He's made all the plays. He's got a good arm. Does he have the greatest range in the world? No, he doesn't have the best, but he has good feet. He has a good quick step. He has never looked. How many times have you looked at him and gone, well, another shortstop would have made that play?
I don't think you've had many of those moments. I think Last night on the broadcast, Steve Stone was talking about with Connor McKnight just how fluid he has seemed in the field with good hands and good footwork. And that's Steve brought up his Colson Montgomery's past as being an outstanding basketball player in high school and how you can't be that kind of a player without the good footwork. Maybe that will change moving forward, but we've seen him that he starts double plays. I think he started 9 double plays, and he's been a guy who has been pretty sturdy and made some outstanding plays in the field as well. Bruce, I think he surprised some people with how athletic he has been and how fluid he has been at the position.
You know, the big shortstop's always been the question mark. You know, how many Cal Ripkins, how many A-Rods are there out there that can play the position at a high level? It's the position you have to play at the highest level, right?
Mm-hmm.
Defensively, you have to be the captain on that team. You have to be able to make all the plays, be able to be the first guy out there to talk to the pitcher when things aren't going right. So there's a lot of things like that Colson Montgomery can grow into. I think he will. I don't think there's going to be that need in the first 5 or 7 years of his career to consider him a third baseman or a first baseman. I think he does have all that agility that allows you to play there. Plus, he feels he's a shortstop.
That's a big plus. Psychologically, right. You have to consider a player like this what he wants to do and where he feels most comfortable. And let's face it, psychologically, Colson Montgomery has come a long way. That's a big part of why he is doing what he's doing. He had that mental respite in Arizona. Seems to have made all the difference in the world. And, Bruce, I think that sometimes the conversation, the White Sox may have gone into this season or after they brought him up on July 4th thinking, well, we'll go back and forth. But since it seems like they have stopped that experiment because he's played 58 games, 46 at shortstop, 12 at third base. They seem to have stopped that experimenting with him on the hot corner.
Look, he's not a finished product, but the idea that he is in the conversation for Rookie of the Year after only coming up in July, as you mentioned, on the 4th of July, hitting all these home runs, being considered, you know, not only a home run hitter, but a guy that looks like an integral part of the White Sox moving forward. This is all positive things that the White Sox nation certainly deserves. And it's been, I think, you know, Teal has been certainly a highlight. But for me, Montgomery is the highlight of them moving forward and being a productive team in the future.
18 home runs, 49 runs driven in, OPS of 819. And the best debate on the South side is which rookie has created the biggest impact. And when did all this start? Was it when Kyle Teal was brought up in June or when Colson Montgomery was brought up on July 4th? And, Bruce, they have just been surrounded by other rookies who come to the ballpark with one thing in mind, proving they belong. And that enthusiasm is infectious. And I think that they have also, I think, very publicly identified Brooks Baldwin was open about, well, they want to avoid 100 losses. Their magic number, if you want to call it that, is 6. They have to win 6 more games to avoid 100 losses this season. And I think given their schedule, that's attainable. And you can argue about the value of that goal and what it means. And they're still, you know, they're going to be a team that loses 99 games or such. But still, they have made progress in the second half, and they've been a 500 team since July.
So here's the conundrum for me. I have a vote for American League Manager of the Year, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So obviously Detroit, Toronto, two guys that have done excellent jobs all year. They're going to be high on my list of guys that I'm looking at. Dan Wilson of Seattle, if Seattle, and they're tied for first place right now in the West. He came in early in the year, took over, and they took off. So those are considerations. But a 25-game improvement from the year before, I'm going to have to think about Will Venable being on that list of people I consider, probably not one or two, but three. You know, we vote for three
right.
American League Manager of the Year. And a 25-game improvement, Will Venable has to be considered.
I think that he would be a guy on my ballot. I would have a difficult time voting him number one, somebody who loses that many games.
Won't be my number one.
No, he won't be your number one. But I could see that. Look, that's a valid point, Bruce. That kind of improvement for a team that has this unproven of talent base, it's something to say. He's done what he should have done. He's exceeded expectations.
And, as a rookie manager.
Yes, as a rookie manager.
Right. And no connection whatsoever with the White Sox before that. So to me, you know, watching him mature as a manager, taking over a team that had very little hope. Again, if I'm listening to me out there right now, I'm going, oh, we're talking about still a team that's bad.
I get
right?
it. I get it.
It's a bad team.
Yeah.
But it hasn't been a bad team from the juncture that you talked about. You know, 500 team over the last 50 games. And that improvement, you hope there's a linear movement going into next year. With the White Sox pitching being what it is right now, I'm not positive about that.
312-644-6767. Do you agree with Bruce and on Will Venable, the job that he has done? I think John Schneider from Toronto, Bruce, would probably be on my ballot. That's that's a team that they have
and
a lot
Hinch.
Of talent.
Yeah,
and AJ Hinch as well. That's a good trio at the top of your ballot. Let's go out to the phone lines. Mike has been waiting patiently in Glencoe. Mike, welcome inside the clubhouse.
Good morning, fellas. And you know, it's appropriate we have this conversation the day after the Rockies won their 41st game. So the Sox are going to probably still hold that record. My concern is that it's kind of an point A to point B issue. The Sox squandered, if that's maybe that's too harsh, but did not take advantage of being able to monetize their core. They got rid of Mercado, Jimenez, and the rest of the gang for basically nothing, including Dylan Cease. So there's a huge gap right now. We have no tradable assets really on the 40-man roster. We have, Bruce, as you've talked about before, kind of weakness in the starting pitching. The kids on the farm are way down in Class A. How do they improve if you really don't have anything to leverage to go out and Bruce, you and I are roughly the same age. When Jerry Reinsdorf bought the team, what did he do? He brought in Carlton Fisk and Greg Luzinski and changed the entire culture. How did the Sox get there?
It's a great question. Really great question, David. Because if you look at the Washington Nationals as a more recent model, mm-hmm. they brought in a guy by the name of Jason Worth when their rebuild started. And they were just ready to start taking off. And Worth was overpaid dramatically, but he was a good player that had tremendous leadership ability, clubhouse savvy. That is why Mike Rizzo brought him in to start that when they had the Bryce Harpers, the young guys coming up in that organization that eventually won a World Series in 2019. And as Mike points out, that's what the White Sox are going to need. They're going to need that one big leader, veteran, that says, you know what? I will sign with the White Sox. I believe in where they're going. I will take their money. Because right now, most free agents of any particular worth would not really want to go to the White Sox.
They want
Sox.
To win.
Right.
They want to win.
So it's going to take some convincing
yes.
as well as Jerry's money to be able to bring those guys in.
I think you look at this year's free agent market just off the top of my head, Bruce, and guys like that do fit the bill, even though it seems unlikely the White Sox will be either in pursuit or able to land them. Josh Naylor, Gino Suarez, Kyle Schwarber, Kyle Tucker. These are guys that are going to be out there as free agents that you wonder if the White Sox will get a seat at the table because they all fit that description that you just mentioned. They'd be veterans who could come into a clubhouse full of young guys who are ascending, and they could show them the way and maybe be a leader for the next phase of whatever
maybe
the White
we're
Sox
a
become.
Year too, David, maybe we're a year too early.
Maybe. But maybe the White Sox are a little bit better than they thought they would be in the second half of the season as well. You can accelerate
no
timelines. You know, there's no
you can,
in
but in the mind of the free agent, it would take an awful lot of overpay for them to come to the White Sox right now.
I agree with that. I understand that. It's going to be a complicated offseason because it all starts with Chris Getz being green-lighted to pursue guys of that caliber and having the financial autonomy maybe to get in those conversations because you're going to need a lot of money to land the kind of guys that I just mentioned. And maybe it's unrealistic, but it is fun to discuss.
It is. And look, again, if you're a White Sox fan, a real White Sox fan, there's tons and hundreds of thousands of them, millions out there too. The idea that we're talking about being better than awful doesn't resonate with everybody.
I get it.
Okay.
Yeah.
It doesn't.
I know.
It's like, you know, let me know when you're going to be good again. Okay. And hitting 500 for the last 50 games, that's a point of they have a chance to be good again, but they're not there.
Wake me when the slumber is over, a lot of people have to say. Breaking news here on The Score brought to you by Wildfire. Join Wildfire Restaurants as they celebrate 30 years of serving delicious food and creating memories. We have a Cubs move, Bruce. The Cubs have recalled outfielder Owen Casey. He will join the Cubs today. Kevin Alcantara is optioned to Iowa. I suppose it's a lefty-righty thing. What do you make of this move, and what role do you think Casey will play?
Well, I thought Alcantara was basically there to play center field when PCA didn't, okay? And right now, I don't think they're thinking about PCA not playing. This was, if you remember, he was called up right when PCA was getting his rest,
mm-hmm.
right? 3 days off. So I think that they value the left-handed bat more off the bench. You know, to be honest with you, they haven't gotten very much out of Santana yet. He's still waiting for his first hit, I believe. I think he's 0 for 14.
Made a nice play the other day in the field.
Yeah, okay.
Made a nice play. And, he did. I'm just telling you. He saved run.
I'm a big fan of his. He's already had an impact on PCA. PCA talked about how he nudged him along and said, let's get going, how he appreciated it. But, you know, as I always kid counsel about, I always say, hey, it's great to have, you know, people like that, but how about getting a hit? You
well,
know, so.
Yeah, it's a good idea every now and then.
Yeah, I mean, you need a base hit. So they feel Casey's a better part of it facing the right-handed pitching they'll be facing coming up here.
Today, Drew Rasmussen on the mound for the Rays. That would be a good time to have Owen Casey in right field. Moises Ballesteros, your designated hitter. Have your two lefty young bats be in there and give them a shot. Right. Let them.
I agree.
Let them rake because this is what they're there for. If Owen Casey isn't in the lineup today, I will be disappointed.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, right now Castro's done a pretty good job, but I think you're going to get more pop against right-handers out of Casey. So let's see if that's the case.
And also with Castro, he's not exactly been on fire either. He's struggled at the plate. So if you want to really be loaded with lefties in the lineup, give Matt Shaw the day off and let Willie Castro play third base. But I would really like to see Casey and Ballesteros in the lineup at the same time because Seiya Suzuki was under the weather. Correct? Is he any better?
We don't know that yet. Yesterday he was under the weather. We undetermined whatever illness he had. So we'll have to look for the lineup and see how it sets for today.
Back to the phone line, 312-644-6767. David is in Des Plaines. David, welcome inside the clubhouse. Good morning, David. We lost David. Let's go to Tim and Hammond. Tim, welcome inside the clubhouse.
Good morning, guys. Hey, Mr. Haw, don't they have drug testing up there where you're working? You just said something about, will the Sox have a seat at the table for Schwarber and Tucker? And are you serious? Do you really think Jerry Reinsdorf's going to pay somebody $300 or $400 million? I can't believe you're the smartest guy in Chicago, and I can't believe you said that. That's beyond belief that you would think that Reinsdorf was going to be involved in somebody like that.
Tim, we had a conversation about what the Sox need moving forward. Bruce identified a veteran that would be of the ilk of the kind of thing that the Cubs did back when they signed John Lester and, to a lesser degree, Jason Hayward. You need to make a move. You need to make a statement. And it is hypothetical, but if the White Sox wanted to make that kind of a statement with a veteran surrounded by young players trying to prove themselves, then they're going to have those conversations. Are they realistic? That's for you to decide. We do have drug testing here.
David,
I'm totally clean. I'm just full of caffeine,
David,
this morning.
Let's be honest.
That's it.
We have to be honest. You did test positive for caffeine.
Yes. Bruce, you get up every morning at 4 o'clock, you'd be full of caffeine too. And my pumpkin spice latte.
I'm full of something else most of the time.
Yeah, well, that's definitely true there.
Just look at the text line and you'll see that.
I would definitely test positive for pumpkin spice, Tim. But that's all I'm under the influence of this morning. Maybe some cold medication too. But other than that, no. Is it a long shot? Absolutely, it's a long shot.
Yeah.
But you know what? It's part, everyone's got a roll. You got to roll. We want to keep the heat on because Kyle Schwarber's out there. You want to get
it's
talk about
maybe,
it.
Maybe Jerry's not going to offer $300 million to Schwarber right now, but Schwarber is going to get that somewhere else. And as we said during our conversation, it might be a year too soon before we're talking anything about that.
But I appreciate the phone call, Tim. Thank you for listening to Inside
you
the
sure?
Clubhouse. Yeah, sure, I do. He's from the region. I have a soft spot for region guys, Bruce. All right, when we come back, Josh Barfield, the assistant general manager for the Chicago White Sox, will join us right here on Inside the Clubhouse. David and Bruce, still 11 on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
As we take a look at the active on-base streaks in Major League Baseball, Teal only trailing Bo Bichette with 20 in a row. Teal sticks out the bat. Could it fall? Yes, it does! Past the diving Williams. Vargas scores. Taylor, he is safe. And Kyle Teal, the rookie, off the bench, drives in two. His active on-base streak is pushed to 20, and the Sox with a 5-0 lead.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haw.
David Haw, Bruce Levine, Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670, the score here until 11 o'clock. We're waiting to connect with Josh Barfield, the White Sox assistant general manager. That was the highlight from CHSN about Kyle Teal's on-base streak. It got to 20, and it ended on Friday. The White Sox were two hit by Tanner Bibee from the Guardians, who's on a hot streak. That Cleveland team's getting tremendous starting pitching, Bruce, and pitching their way back into wild card contention. They're not messing around.
They are a good team. They do have a ways to go, though, now in the American League wild card race. They are three games basically behind Houston and Seattle. It's Houston and Seattle are tied with the top record with 68 losses in the American League West. after that, it's the Rangers with two behind, Guardians three behind. But those numbers are huge right now, David. 2 and 3 are big numbers with only 14 and 15 games left in the season. It doesn't sound that way, but it really is.
It's a lot of ground to cover.
It is. Yeah. I mean, when you look at the Cubs' five-game lead over San Diego in the loss column with 15 left, it's an enormous amount. Right?
In the National League, how do you see the third spot shaping up? What do you think will happen with the Mets really reeling at this point? And you look at the Giants and the Reds still within striking distance.
Yeah, I mean, look, the Mets right now have lost 7 straight, okay? Really bad time to be slumping. And then you have 72 losses for them, 72 losses for San Francisco, and 73 for Cincinnati. So those are the three teams that are fighting it out right now for the last slot in the wild card. And again, the Cubs, I mean, the Cubs and White Sox are going to have a real impact on that race for the National League wild card, because the Cubs are going to play the Mets 3 games before the end of the year coming up here. And the White Sox next weekend plays San Diego. So they're going to have an impact on that National League race as well. That's going to be interesting to watch the Padres come into the rate and see what they have for the White Sox and for that race coming up. It's going to be interesting to watch.
I don't think that you want any part of the Dodgers, and I don't think that's becoming even likely, because the Padres look like they're locked into that number 2 spot, Bruce, which seems to be a good matchup for the Cubs. How do you look at that matchup? I know it's premature, but it does seem to be the way things are headed.
Well, you know, you're going to see your old friends, Yu Darvish and Dylan Cease, right? Two familiar Chicago names that are going to be part of the equation that you're going to have to face. To me, the Padres, you hate to say it in a short series, but, you know, I like where the Cubs are at. I really do. I mean, I like the way that they're going forward. So, you know, to me, the momentum that the Cubs start to gain here over the next 2 weeks, that's what you look at here the last part of the year. Who are the teams that are reeling? Who are the teams that are hot going into the playoffs?
What is the status as we wait here? What is the status on Kyle Tucker in terms of the expectations of his return? That is a key thing moving forward. And I think Craig Counsell sounded not that optimistic that on Tuesday when he's eligible to come off the IL that he will do that. I know they just brought up Owen Casey. They have protection with him as a left-handed power bat, but he's not Kyle Tucker.
Right. Well, Tucker is eligible to come off on Tuesday, but Craig Counsell said it's probably not going to be Tuesday. My guess is you're looking at next weekend to get him back at full strength.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's probably the ideal part. And it's probably another reason why they just brought up Casey today to be more of the right fielder than, having guys like Castro in there. Like you said, Castro's done an okay job, but I think the pop of Casey is more intriguing to them right now.
How do you see Daniel Palencia coming back in terms of what they're looking for and how he might fit?
Well, Palencia to me is a question mark coming back. So he's been terrific for them all year, but I would say the last three or four times that he was out there, he looked human, right?
Mm-hmm.
And for him to look human means he wasn't dominating, and he blew a couple of saves. So, again, when he comes back, is he really the closer, or is he a part of the scientist Craig Counsell's grand plan just to get out?
I think you talk about guys who aren't great in save situations or who might not be as effective in the seventh or eighth as he is in the ninth. And I wonder if he falls into that category. He's a younger pitcher. He has yet to really establish himself as a major league closer. Certainly looked great in the sample size of the half of a season and then getting into this part. But Bruce, I wonder if you lose something in Daniel Palencia, if you bring him back in a different role than he's used to.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's a great point that you bring up, David. Do you lose the confidence in himself by just being an out-getter in the seventh or eighth?
Mm-hmm.
And again, the electricity from 102, even though it got hit in the wrong location a couple of times, is still something that I think Counsell and the coaches want to keep moving forward. So it'll probably be one of the great topics that we talk about starting coming up, but it's not till the 22nd of September, right?
Yeah, that's in 10 days. That's 9 days. And I think you talk about him coming back. He has to get well quickly. He has to find command immediately because you don't have time to waste on him getting back into form. You want him to be in top form because your season gets on the line, right? When you start, you get to the end of September, and the playoffs start immediately. You got three games at Wrigley Field. He better be ready.
Yeah. Well, he needs to be ready. But again, you're talking about basically a rookie. He pitched last year, right? But as far as this role as the closer of the Chicago Cubs, I mean, that's a lot. And were we looking at a combination of emotional and physical breakdown for Daniel Palencia? That's the question I have for you.
Well, Carson Kelly addressed the idea of Palencia coming back and what role he might play. This is what he had to say. The veteran
he's done a great job for us all year, and especially for a young guy coming in and handling those late innings, it's really important. And he's been great for us all year, and hopefully, I don't know what it is, but hopefully, he's good to go here in the next day or so.
Hopefully, there's a lot of hope there, Bruce. I wonder this, if he's not ready, depending on where he is in 9 days, does he make the playoff roster? Is he in a position where he might not be a guy that if you don't know that you can count on him if he's left off the playoff roster?
Well, if he's healthy, he's on there.
Oh, yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
He's going to be there. The question is, and again, I might be looking too deep into it because all pitchers have up and down times. But when we talked to Kelly, and you heard that soundbite, he said that the 102 was hit because it was poorly located. Okay. He didn't say poorly. I'm saying poorly because he said it was a matter of location. I said, how do these guys hit 102? He said, it's location. You know, he was down in the zone with 102, and it was hit. When it's up in the zone, it's a whole different 102. Now, can you imagine that, us as novices never having faced anything like that, that the 102 doesn't play everywhere in the zone?
Well, it's easier to hit out of the ballpark. I think Craig Counsell addressed that. When you have guys who are that high of velocity, those are you're gonna miss, and it's gonna be hit out of the ballpark if you do. It's unlike different type of pitchers, and if you're a power pitcher and you connect, then it's gonna leave the park easily.
So my question to you though, David, is saving Shaw for the last out in the seventh and a whole inning in the eighth was kind of the plan that they were looking at to expand his role a little bit if needed in big games. Do you stick with that now, knowing that that Keller is your best pitcher and that he could be the closer, but that you can get more important outs and matchups in the seventh and eighth inning to be able to get to the ninth?
Right now, Brad Keller is your most reliable relief pitcher. He's the guy that, whatever the case is, when you're high leverage situations, depending on the matchup, who I would want on the mound in the most important moments. Now, does that mean he is your closer? No. I think this is why the ambiguity surrounding the roles is necessary. Because if Brad Keller's in a big game against the Mets or maybe against the Padres in the postseason, it's the seventh inning, bring him in. Because you put out that fire, and then you worry about the rest later. What you have is guys emerge like Andrew Kittredge, who has two saves in the past week. We haven't even really mentioned about him, but he's been really steady. And you have opportunities for other guys to come through. I think you start to prioritize who is your high-leverage situation after the sixth inning, and then you use them accordingly.
Right. Well, I'm with you, and I think that's where Counsell is at. You know, when he tells you about the 27 outs, he doesn't really feel that the ninth inning is all that important unless you get there, right? So the matchup with the best hitters in an opposing team's lineup might be in the seventh and eighth. That's what he wants to get out. So he's a matchup specialist. That's what he wants. Again, Palencia had assumed that role as a closer, but those important outs by Thielbar and by Keller and by Kittredge, those are essential to winning a ball game. I guess what he tells us is we put a little too much credence on the closer and not enough on being able to keep that lead to get into the ninth inning.
We talk about the bullpen, and we have a lot as the strength of this team lately. When you look at the playoff roster, getting ahead of ourselves, but there's going to be a starting pitcher that's going to be the odd man out, correct? You look at the bullpen arms that you need to have available. You wonder where a guy like Javier Assad fits in. You wonder about a guy like Ben Brown fits in. Will they be guys who will be part of the postseason roster? I would think Assad would have to be based on how well he has pitched. What do you think in terms of how they're starting to have these kind of conversations?
Well, let's move it up to Jameson Taillon. Where does he fit in the first round?
I don't know if he does, Bruce. If it's a three-game series and you're talking about Horton, you're talking about Boyd, you're talking about Shota, I don't know if your fourth starter is a guy that has a spot on the roster.
So, but do you leave him off the roster, or do you make him a long man, a guy that comes in case things start getting out of control in game one and
two? If he has a couple more solid starts, I think he would be the guy that you would have as your long man. You'd have to consider that as somebody you want in there, Assad as well. But you're gonna start running out of spots quickly because you have a lot of guys that you have come to rely upon that you might not be in a position to.
Now, keep in mind, the starting pitcher is used to having 35 to 40 pitches to get ready, okay? So they're not trained as bullpen guys. Ben Brown right now is trained as a bullpen guy to get ready quicker. Okay, so would you take Brown over Taillon if that is your choice going into the postseason?
I don't think I would, Bruce. I think I trust the experience. Even though Jameson Taillon is not a quote-unquote bullpen guy, I do think that he's adaptable enough to get ready in every way to come into maybe it'd have to be a clean inning. You know, maybe it wouldn't be something when he has inherits runners or traffic and those kinds of things in the middle of an inning. But I think that if he were to be a guy that you could rely on to, you know, start the fifth or start the fourth, whatever the case may be, I would trust him in a high leverage playoff situation against the Padres more than I would Ben Brown at this point.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I think it's a really positive thing because you have some really good choices, don't you? And the idea that you're not looking around for pitching, rather you're looking around for what's more ideal is something you like going into the playoffs.
No doubt about it. All right, when we come back on Inside the Clubhouse, we'll wrap things up with something I'm looking forward to on Monday. It's David Haw, Bruce Levine, until 11 o'clock Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
And the 2-2. Awkward swing and miss at a slider. Strike three. Two away.
That's the really good slider that Horton has when you buzz the fastball and you got good command as he does today. Then you start spinning that breaking ball. And for the right-handed hitter, you know, you got to commit to the fastball and the slider just eats you up.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haw.
Tomorrow, join the Score in Circus Sports Illinois at Jarrett Payton's flagship on the Fox in St. Charles. Olin Cruz, Patrick Manley, and Mully will host the pregame show 9 to noon and have immediate reaction after Chicago takes on Detroit. Postgame show streamed exclusively on YouTube and Twitch due to the Cubs game. That's tomorrow, flagship on the Fox in St. Charles, sponsored by Circus Sports Illinois. Sports betting the way it should be. That was a highlight from back in June. Cade Horton on the mound. Thank you to Ron Coomer and the Score and Zach. Bruce, we wrap things up here. Monday, both the Pirates and the Cubs are on schedule to put on the mound respectively. Paul Skenes, Cade Horton. It'll be the second time that happened. Can't wait because both guys have emerged this season as two of the top. Paul Skenes already was. Cade Horton has joined him, two of the top pitchers in baseball.
Well, it's not exactly Gibson and Jenkins, is it? But it's the modern
Cooper.
Version of it.
Yeah,
right.
It's fun. It's
I mean,
fun.
Do you think either one will ever get into the seventh inning here?
I don't know. Probably not. I don't.
Oh, I'm ruining it for you, aren't I?
You are killing my buzz, Bruce. I have all that caffeine and sugar in me, and now you're killing my buzz.
It's certainly a fun matchup. I mean, they're two of the very fine pitchers in the game right now, and they're exciting to watch because they're guys that can strike out and command a game for six innings. And I think with any type of flexibility down the line here, I think that Horton expects himself to go seven or eight innings in the future. That's what he expects when they take the training wheels off of him and allow him to go 100 pitches. I think he's a seven or eight inning pitcher. That's what we see.
Cubs' magic number to clinch the wild card slot is seven, Bruce. So they go at it back today at Wrigley Field. It's Anthony Rizzo Day at the ballpark. Big day ahead. What are you expecting today from Colin Ray?
Just to make the wild card, right?
Yeah. To clinch the wild card spot, yes.
Yeah, seven. I got him at 10 for clinching the top spot.
Yes, well, your numbers are more correct than mine. I was just getting in. I was just get in, Bruce. But you said the top spot is 10. I will go with 10.
I think it's huge. Don't you think home field advantage is really huge?
Oh, I definitely think it's huge.
It didn't help them in 2020. They had two games at home against Miami.
Yeah, but that was such an odd dynamic, that entire shortened season. that I think this is a little bit different. And you look at the Padres coming in here, it won't be easy, but I do like the Cubs at home in that matchup. And I think then they would go into the Brewers series with a lot of momentum.
We forgot to congratulate the Cubs. They won 84 games for the first time since 2019.
Wow, how about that? They were 83-83 2 years in a row. 83 victories in 2023 got David Ross fired. 83 wins last year disappointed Craig Counsell. They have broken through the threshold.
It's exciting, isn't it, David?
It is exciting. Hey, Bruce, tell me this. Do you think David Ross will be there today for Anthony Rizzo Day?
I do not. But if he was, I wouldn't be shocked. You know, they're close friends.
Yeah, so and you said he was the leader of that team, and I remember right. their friendship well. Everyone does.
I was just I was expecting this is more family and Eddie Vedder.
Okay, well,
Eddie Vedder and Chelly.
Eddie Vedder is family, right?
Obviously,
I
mean, right?
I think it's probably still gonna. What do you think? Will it still be awkward for David Ross to walk into Wrigley Field for the first time?
Absolutely. The first time he does that, assuming he hasn't already, we don't know if he has or hasn't, but I would think it'd be extremely awkward.
Yeah, I mean, again, David's career is moving forward.
Yep.
I occasionally talk to him. He's had some broadcast opportunities recently. Also is going to be the bench coach for the World Baseball Classic for Mark DeRosa's USA team.
Well, if David Ross is sitting next to Anthony DeRizzo in the studio, I'm watching. I'd watch that
show. All right,
show.
Well, we're gonna find out pretty soon, David. A lot of people to thank, especially Sean Sears for a job well done. You for setting me up, making me look good all the time. And Caleb Thielbar for joining us on the show as well.
You're the best, Bruce. Thank you for all your hard work. Have a good time out there on Anthony DeRizzo Day. Thank you for listening. Thank you, Sean Sears. You've been listening to Inside the Clubhouse right here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Talk to you Monday morning.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.